Welcome to Tom and Lorenzo's Pop Style Opinion Fest.
We're here to render judgment on the worlds of celebrity, pop culture, television, and fashion.
Strap yourselves in for some hardcore opinionating, darlings.
This is Tom and Lorenzo's Pop Style Opinion Fest.
We're Tom and Lorenzo.
And this is the Pop Style Opinion Fest. Hello, kittens. Welcome back to another edition of the PSO. I am the T in your T-Lo, Tom Fischel. I'm here with the Lou in your T-Lo, Lorenzo, my lovely husband.
Hello.
Hello, Lorenzo. I was just actually thinking while doing this that there's been some talk recently of us doing live podcasts when the book tour starts. And I can't do that intro unless my eyes are closed. I literally cannot make, I stumble over my words. So I'm like, I don't know if I could ever do that in front of an audience because I'm going to look like such a jackass. Anyway, hello everyone. We are back for another week of opinions on matters high and low. We had a fun week this week.
Yeah,
or at least
a great
we had one really super fun day this week. You know, we spend 99% of our time slaving away at desks in our home, barely interacting with anybody but each other. And sometimes it's a real treat to get out into the world in a professional manner for us. And we had a day of meetings at Penguin in New York.
The Penguin Tower, the big building.
And they're
the offices in,
they're
in
just
New York.
Rather impressive movie set like offices.
Movie set. It does.
It does look like a movie set.
They're
probably
all gorgeous.
Anyone who's listening who was there would probably rolling our eyes at this description, but it does. It absolutely looks like what you think a publishing office in New York would look like.
It's like very very wide, very modern, and walls of books.
Walls of books on against blonde wood. Anyway, but the real treat was to meet first our editor, who we had not yet met face to face, although we had worked so hard together for so long. And we all went out to lunch together. Then we had a day of meetings and marketing and stuff like that, sales plans and things we're going to do to promote the book. And it was all very fun. And and we got to hold our book in our hands.
For the first time. Not the actual book, like a review copy.
It's formatted and printed exactly like the book. It's got the full wraparound cover. So just a fun day, just a super fun day. This is a good time to put it out there, which I think we're going to have to formalize this with an actual post sometime in the next week or two. But, one of the things we would really like to do is reach out to booksellers. So anyone who's listening, if you, work in a bookstore, if you're a bookseller, drop us a line at, tomandlorenzo@gmail.com. I guess just put bookseller in the title, because that's how we'll know. What we want to do is, reach out to you guys, and if you're so interested, send you a copy of the book, because who better to sell our book for us than booksellers? And if we would like to get people excited about it, you guys would be the first line for us. So anybody who's listening who either is one or knows one who might be interested in our book, Legendary Children, the First Decade of RuPaul's Drag Race and the Last Century of Queer Life, please, please, please have them, or do it yourself. Drop us a line at tomandlorenzo@gmail.com. We would love to send you a copy.
Also, if you haven't bought or pre-bought.
Yeah, I mean, it's available for pre-order. So,
just pre-order the book.
We're going, folks, when you got a book to sell, you got to sell it. And those bitter kittens out there who have really stuck with us all through everything, we're sorry, but you're going to hear a lot of this over the next 6 to 9 months.
It's just that the reality of it is that it does make a huge difference when
it
people pre-order the book.
And to any budding authors out there, you should know that your publisher is always going to expect you to be the first line of marketing your book. When you sign with a publisher and your book is completed, your work does not end. You are literally the point person on promoting the book. And it becomes in its own way a full-time job. So, and for us, I'm not naive. One of the selling points of Tom and Lorenzo from a publisher's point of view is our various platforms, which we have cultivated over the years, which is our site and this podcast and our social media accounts.
And you guys.
You guys. Which we love you. So thank you for being patient with us, because we are going to continue to talk and make appeals about the book. Anyway, booksellers, tomandlorenzo@gmail.com. Please let us know you're out there, and we would love to send you a copy.
The great thing about going to the offices, the Penguin offices, and meeting all the people that are going to work on our book is that it's to me, I don't know about you, but it was a great experience for me because I tend to be a control freak. And it's nice to see, to have a meeting with a bunch of people and very talented people in various fields, working together with us.
Yes.
To promote something you did. I think that I just,
for independent bloggers like us, it's just such a treat to sit at a table full of people who are all like, okay, we're going to work to promote you.
People who did a lot of research, people who know what they're doing, they've been doing what they're doing, what they do for a long time, and they're excited about your book.
Yeah.
They're excited about what you have to offer, and they're, you know, they work very hard to come up with a plan.
Right.
It's nice. It's very nice to see.
It's a bit heady, but it's thrilling as hell from our perspective. And we're just, we're old enough. We've had enough experience behind us that we know when these things come in your life, take a deep breath and savor the shit out of them. Seriously, folks. When good things come your way, when validation comes your way, when, I don't know, excitement for what comes next comes your way, savor these moments. They're really, really important. Anyway, didn't want to turn this into a whole, you know, book pitch thing. And you know what? Before we move on to anything else, we have a bunch of things that are very topical to discuss this week. But actually, I really want to discuss my deodorant. I don't know why. It just came upon me. No, this portion of the podcast is being sponsored by Native Deodorant, which I have actually been using. Take care of your body. It's the only place you have to live. At Native, they create safe, simple, effective products that people use in the bathroom every day. They create products with trusted ingredients and trusted performance. Not convinced? Check out the 8,000 five-star reviews from their customers. Their deodorant, that's Native deodorant, is formulated without aluminum, parabens, or talc. It's filled with ingredients found in nature such as coconut oil, which is an antimicrobial, shea butter, a moisturizer and emollient, and tapioca starch, which absorbs wetness. Plus, best thing, no animal testing, and there's free shipping and returns. Speaking from experience, I love the way it smells. It is as effective as the best deodorants you can buy. I just love it. I have the most sensitive skin you can possibly imagine. Lorenzo has spent the last 2 decades making fun of my ashy pink Irish skin and how, especially with deodorants. For the longest time, if Lorenzo was running out to a drugstore and saying, I would say I need deodorant, he would get me this stuff and I would be like, no, I can't use that brand or I can't use that style. And it would be so frustrating for him. So speaking as someone who is very touchy about these sort of things, I have loved using Native because it absolutely is perfect for sensitive skin, for my sensitive skin. And it works. Making the switch to a natural deodorant does not mean having to sacrifice on odor and wetness protection, which I have not. So test it out and see how it works for you. Less is more with Native. They have fewer, simpler ingredients, so you know everything that's in their deodorant.
I like the whole combination of coconut and tapioca and all these elements.
Me too.
I mean, they're great.
That's for someone like me or for anyone. And I mean, seriously, for our perspective, the fact that it's a product that does not engage in animal testing is
always
a big number one reason to support a product like this. So that's Native Deodorant. And for 20% off your first purchase, visit nativedeodorant.com and use promo code TLO during checkout. That's nativedeodorant.com. Use promo code TLO during checkout for 20% off your first purchase. Thank you, Native. Okay, so it was a very interesting interview this week. We gave our thoughts on the matter of Emmy's fashion to Raquel Lanieri from the New York Post, who was doing a piece. I don't know how much of what we said to her is going to be in the piece, but it spurred on a discussion that we wanted to flesh out today, which is, I think the gist of the upcoming piece in the Post is about how television actresses have really broken out on the style front and how some of them, or so many of them, have become such distinctive style icons. And the names that were brought up in the interview were people like Phoebe Waller-Bridge from Fleabag, or Natasha Lyonne from Russian Doll, or Jodie Comer from Killing Eve. And there were other, and we batted around other names and we talked about this. And, you know, Lorenzo and I were not sure that we agreed at first with the gist of what was the interview was about, which was this idea that they are... is there something wrong with my mic? It's okay. No. Mm-hmm. Okay. The idea that these women are uncommonly stylish for, you know, for any reason other than this. When we look at Emmy's fashion, when we look at TV promotional fashion, do you not agree that it's full of players now that were not the type of people walking TV red carpets when we started out 10 years ago?
Oh, I agree. I mean, the thing is that that whole thing of Hollywood glamour, movie stars, it's no longer just what you see on the red carpet. Because I think we discussed it. TV shows are becoming very, very important, very, very talked about.
We're in prestige TV, peak TV. Right. There's so much out there.
You know, major movie stars now are dying to do TV because they recognize how important some of the TV shows are to promote them and how popular they become. So yeah, of course, if you have Nicole Kidman doing TV shows, she's going to be on the red carpet wearing something that Nicole Kidman would wear
on a red carpet, on a movie premiere red carpet.
Yes. She's not going to wear something, you know, a little simpler just because she's doing a TV show as opposed to a movie premiere.
Right.
And that means that, you know, everyone doing TV, people who...
Their game has stepped up.
Right. People who didn't have the chance or didn't have the opportunity to do that much red carpet appearances. All of a sudden is on the red carpet all the time. I mean, you saw Orange the New Black, all these ladies on the red carpet all the time. So many TV shows. And of course, you're going to get those actors, actresses who have a different style, who are more unique in the way they dress. So you are going to get all these things, you know, represented on the red carpet that you didn't see before.
When with peak TV or prestige TV or whatever you want to call it, we're in a moment where there is more TV being offered than ever before on more platforms than anyone could have imagined. And because of that, the type of TV shows that are being made would not have been made 15 years ago. I mean, Russian Doll is not a TV show, or Fleabag is not a TV show that probably would have been snapped up by HBO or Fox, or, you know, it just wouldn't. Peak TV, there's a lot of downsides to it. We've talked about the downsides on this podcast, the fact that we're losing a monoculture and everybody's off segmented in their little entertainment caves. But it does allow for the telling of stories that are not normally told in television. And it allows for the casting of people who may not normally get cast in television. Sorry about that. That's a little bit of microphone stuff going on there, but I think it's okay. So it's a different style of actress. It's not, you know, I remember, I don't mean to be really nasty or anything, but I, you know, when we started out doing red carpet commentary on a daily basis, and that was circa 2008, 2009, when you did television appearances, when you did things like the upfronts or TV premiere parties or whatever, there was kind of a blandness across the board that was expected from television actresses. They were not expected to be distinctive in their style. Absolutely not. It was more or less you wear a princess gown for a formal event and you wear a short cocktail dress for a less formal event, and that was it. And it was basic styles. There just wasn't a lot of room for expressing yourself. But I feel like the red carpet on a whole has become... a venue of higher and better expression for the people involved.
Right.
The people who are really good, who are really lauded for their red carpetry, Kristen Stewart, Cate Blanchett, Tilda Swinton, Lupita Nyong'o, they are doing high fashion. They're doing fantastic promotional fashion, but they are clearly being true to themselves and distinct in their style. And they have influenced a bunch of other people. We've talked about the men who have done this as well. Chadwick Boseman, Timothy Chalamet, they've come along and they have made it, they've given male stars, especially young male stars and male stars of color, permission to really go outside the box. Don't dress like an accountant. And these are, from our perspective, as people who write about these things, just a good thing. You know,
it's just
a good thing to see. It's more interesting. And I think it's more effective as a promotional tool for these stars than just going out there in whatever was handed to them or chose or curated without their input. So when it comes to the Emmys, and you're talking about actresses on the Emmy track or who have been nominated for Emmys, you're talking about the ones who really rise to the top of a very crowded pool. And that kind of means the bland ones are not the ones getting nominated. When you look at the women who get nominated now for Emmys, it's a string of highly respected actresses or highly distinct actresses. Mm-hmm. People like Phoebe Waller-Bridge, Natasha Lyonne, Jodie Comer, Sandra Oh. These are women who sort of break the blandness mold of television acting. But you are correct also to say that the addition of people like Nicole Kidman or Amy Adams is nominated this year, and Michelle Williams. These are women who have walked major movie red carpets right. over the years and done it wearing super, super high fashion. So there's all these combinations mm-hmm. of factors as to why the Emmy Awards in particular have evolved so much in the last 10 years. I would also add that the Tony Awards have had a similar evolution.
Yes,
very similar in the sense that there have been a string of very high budget, extremely popular plays that have hit the public in the last 10 years. Things like Hamilton and Dear Evan Hansen and stuff like that, Book of Mormon. And then there's also been a greater migration of movie stars and TV stars onto the Broadway stage, which means... And then Anna Wintour got involved. The Tonys actually stepped their pee up because Anna Wintour got
right,
involved.
Right, and she got involved. Yes.
For years, when we first started covering the Tonys, like around 2008, it was kind of a sad affair. It really was. No one was getting high fashion. And there was a much... Not that this should matter to theater purists, but from a publicity point of view, there were not as many famous people like TV or movie stars walking the red right. carpet. So it was... just not as much fun to cover. And Anna Wintour, I think partially because she'll never stop looking for a way to promote the fashion industry, and partially because as a New Yorker, she felt it was her responsibility to take control of the situation and turn it into yet another high fashion event. So the Tonys now are much more competitive in terms of style than
That's
they
true.
Used to
yeah.
be.
Yeah, I agree. I totally agree. And it's nice to see that variation and see all these different types of fashions on the red carpet. I still love to see gowns, but it's also nice to see someone wearing something a little more edgy.
Right. It's not just that everybody's dressing more high fashion. They're dressing in, like, look at Natasha Lyonne. Look at how she dresses. Nobody right, else dresses right, right, like right. that.
And the thing is that I go back to the Hollywood glamour. In a way, those actresses, they were forced to wear a certain style of you know, on the red carpet. And with these new actresses, I don't know, with TV and more options, Netflix and all that, I think they're a little more open to be themselves. I think
social media has done a
yes,
lot.
Yes, and then they feel that they can add their own unique style to whatever they're wearing.
It's a branding
yeah,
thing now.
Yeah, as opposed to just having to wear a certain
right,
look.
Right.
They feel like they can add their own style to whatever look they're wearing on the red carpet.
Right.
As opposed to just having to represent something.
Like, I think you can look at someone like Jennifer Lawrence as a cautionary tale who signed on with Dior. I'm sure she has made a shit ton of money for herself doing it. But she has spent most of her A-list career on red carpets in stuff that really didn't suit her and
right.
really didn't seem like her.
Right.
And after a while, people started noticing that she isn't great at that. You know, she's just...
Right.
Her brand isn't very distinct from that perspective. Excuse me. But as per the usual, this is just overthinking the red carpet. Is everything okay?
No, it's fine.
Okay. I'm worried that this is not recording.
No. It is recording.
I know. Sometimes people don't understand sometimes that there's a whole technical thing going on at the same time as there is a whole discussion thing going on. We're both on stage and backstage at the same time.
Running
it's
both
very,
ways.
Very weird.
Yes.
Anyway, so I don't know. Did you want to add anything else about this? I think it's an interesting thing to explore. I am very, very much looking forward to Sunday night to see what is Phoebe Waller-Bridge going to wear? What is Natasha Lyonne
right,
going to wear?
Right,
because
right.
Those women just do not show up in basic anything.
Right.
Also, looking forward to Amy Adams, Michelle Williams. I mean, there's just a high level of red carpet expectations this year.
I'm always excited. Yeah, yeah, I'm always excited. And you know, a lot of my favorite, some of my favorite actresses are, have been nominated.
Yeah,
this year,
I think the Emmys are maybe not as popular, but in terms of the style expectations of the Emmys, they're pretty much, they're not much below the Oscars at this point. And there used to be a much bigger divide, at least when we started, in terms of expectations. So our expectations for Sunday night are high. We are going to be live tweeting the red carpet on Sunday night.
Oh, of course, yes.
And, you know, I don't know what's coming up this weekend. We had kind of a slow week on the red carpet front, but there's usually a lot of luncheons and pre-stuff. So we might actually drop some things this weekend.
Right.
So check in on our site with that. Let me see. What else are we going to talk about? You know what? Before we move on, I would like to talk about BetterHelp, which is sponsoring this portion of the podcast. Is there something that interferes with your happiness or is preventing you from achieving your goals? And I'll stop right there and say, isn't that something we all face almost all the time? And aren't there times when that gets overwhelming? I know there are times when it has been overwhelming for me, and I think therapy is the great, you know, tool in helping people navigate the world. And sometimes there's a lot of, you know, pushback against the idea of therapy, but it's a tough world out there, people, and sometimes you need a little help or a little someone to talk to. And BetterHelp Online Counseling is there for you. You can connect with your professional counselor in a safe and private online environment that could not be more convenient. You can now get help on your own time and at your own pace. You can schedule secure video or phone sessions, plus chat and text with your therapist. Licensed professional counselors on BetterHelp who are specialized in depression, stress, anxiety, relationships, sleeping, trauma, anger, family conflicts, LGBT matters, grief, and self-esteem. And anything you share is confidential. And if you're not happy with your counselor for any reason, you can request a new one at any time at no additional charge. There are 3,000 U.S. licensed therapists across all 50 states available. And there are four communication modes: text, chat, phone, and video. So you can start communicating in under 24 hours. How freaking convenient is that? Private, safe, secure, confidential, in your own home. And there's a broad expertise in the network, which may not be locally available in many areas, and financial aid is available for those who qualify. Best of all, it's a truly affordable option. Tom and Lorenzo's Pop Style Opinion Fest listeners get 10% off your first month with discount code TLO. So why not get started today? Go to betterhelp.com/TLO. Simply fill out a questionnaire to help them assess your needs and get matched with a counselor you'll love. That's betterhelp.com/TLO. Thank you, BetterHelp. So this week we went to see Judy, which is the biopic of Judy Garland starring Renee Zellweger, which we've had a lot of opinions about because, you know, we're gay bloggers. Of course we're going to have opinions. We reviewed it, gave it a gushing review, and this was after a year of kind of poo-pooing all the promotional stuff because we really didn't think Renee Zellweger
didn't like the trailer,
was right for
like
the part.
Anything.
But
yeah.
I do reiterate something. Yeah. Pardon me. When it comes to Judy Garland, and I think this is true for a lot of, let's say, white gays. I will not speak for every gay person, but I think up and down the age scale, because I think even younger white gays, I hear them sort of refer to her this way. I don't have the Judy gene. I've never owned a Judy album. I, for the most part, really wouldn't just ask Alexa to play a Judy song for me. It's not the kind of thing I would sit through. Mm-hmm. It's not. And I like some old, get me started on Ella Fitzgerald or Dinah Washington. I can listen to them for hours, but Judy's not that person. I enjoy most of the films that of hers that most of the public enjoys. A Star is Born or, I don't know, Summer Stock, of course, Wizard of Oz. She's done some classic work. I fully recognize that, yes, in the 20th century pantheon of entertainers, she ranks really high in terms of her talent level and the kind of work that she put out. I also completely understand that she had a really rough life, and she's a figure of some, you know, sympathy. But I don't have that crazy Judy gene. I do, however, have this feeling, and I think a lot of gays do, of slight ownership of Judy. Because, mm-hmm. you know, regardless of how I feel about her, she looms in gay culture. She looms in gay history. And it's just kind of hard not to, you don't have to love her, you don't have to defend her for, you know, vehemently or anything like that. But there is this slight sense of ownership. And mm-hmm. I think that's why we responded to the promotional material for Judy, which first started coming out in March of 2018. I checked the first post we wrote about it, which this image of Renee in Judy drag dropped. And I remember it went viral. Social media went nuts over it. We did a post and we were like, yeah, the resemblance is there, but she's too elegant looking. She's too healthy looking for the Judy that they say they're portraying. And then when the trailers dropped, I think those are, in, I went back and looked at them after we watched the movie and I was like, these are some badly edited trailers. They really are. They all focus on the parts of her performance where she's clearly Renee Zellweger, where she's squinting her eyes or pursing her lips. And there's nothing, in retrospect, there's nothing wrong with that, that you can see the actress in the role. But it doesn't give you a sense of when she really does hit the moment. Mm-hmm. And I don't mean she hits moments of perfect mimicry. She hits moments of honesty mm-hmm. where you buy her in this role. You buy her as this woman, not because of how she looks or how she sounds, but because she just nails who we think Judy was. Correct?
Yeah, I agree. And we talked about that. I think the trailer focused more on her as a performer. Oh, here's Judy
her singing over the rainbow.
Yeah, here's her doing what Judy Garland did, the movies, right, musicals, right. and all that. And when you see the movie, it's way more than that.
Yeah.
And I don't think the trailer captured that. And maybe the trailer couldn't capture that. I don't know.
I think they shouldn't have focused so much on the production numbers because, to be honest, there's very few of them in the film. Most of them end badly when she's on stage. And most of them are just snippets. That you right. don't get a full from beginning to end Judy number in maybe once or twice in the
yes,
film.
It's more about her life, more her struggles. And
she was it was the last 6 months of her life.
Right. So, and again, just like you, I'm not a huge fan. Well, at least I wasn't.
Now you suddenly feel
oh
it?
Oh my God, I spent like a whole afternoon searching and
were you watching clips of her?
I was reading articles from the time.
Oh, okay.
And just about her husband. I didn't know about her last husband. I didn't know much about
Mickey
her last
Deans,
husband.
Yeah, he's so in I the was, movie played by Finn Wittrock.
Right. I wanted to see pictures of him and
he
and,
does not look like Finn
no.
Wittrock.
So anyway, I was more like a Barbara Streisand crazy.
Really?
Homo.
Yeah,
yes.
I guess I could see that.
Oh, I was. I had all the albums. I knew all the
really?
Songs. Yeah, oh my God. I was a huge
I'm
fan.
I'm learning something new. You
oh
kept
my
that from
God.
Me.
Huge fan. And Julie Andrews, of course.
That I knew.
But
and I would stop you right there. Lorenzo was a trained violinist. He's a trained classical musician. And I think when you single out Barbara Streisand and Julie Andrews as your favorites over Judy, I think that makes perfect sense from a classical musician's
right,
perspective.
Right, right. I'm not saying that.
Those are two women who took very good care of their instruments and
right.
kept them very fine-tuned like a violinist. Judy, for all her talent, and it was insane level of talent, she didn't finely modulate it like a virtuoso. She just came at you full blast. That was
right.
what Judy did.
Also, I'm not a fan of musicals in general. There are some specific musicals that I absolutely love, but as a genre, I'm not a fan.
Right.
It's not something, you wouldn't see me at a bar.
singing along. No,
singing
no, no.
along by
That's
the piano.
You.
No, it's just not me at all. I'm not that homo. But I appreciate her work. I've always thought she was amazing.
Yeah.
Didn't know much about her. It was more about her career in movies and,
right,
and things
right.
like that. Anyway, so when I saw the trailer, watched the trailer with you and then alone, and I was like, you know, I'm not just not feeling it.
Yeah.
But, and it was funny. We had just gotten back from New York.
It was the next morning after our meetings in New York. We had a 10 a.m. screening of this movie.
They sent an email like, you know, same day or the day before or something like that. And they were like, screen at 10 a.m. And I'm like, oh my God, 10 a.m. I was like, all right, let's just go.
Oh, and I should, let me just stop you there and say, after we had said these things about the trailers and we thought she was miscast, Guy Lodge, who is a film critic in England, he writes for the Guardian, I think, among other things. He writes for a lot of film journals and stuff like that. We got into a discussion with him on social media. In fact, he DM'd us and said, listen, I saw it and it's actually amazing. So I was primed going into it, and she had gotten like a 6 or 8 minute standing ovation at Toronto Film Festival.
Yes.
So I was like, all right, I'm primed to eat crow on this. It didn't shock me going into it that she was good, but honestly, I didn't expect her to be that good. Go ahead.
So it was quite the experience because, first of all, they sent us an email at last minute, and it was a 10 a.m. Screening. So there were like five people in the movie theater, probably. including us. Yes, and we were all talking about like, yeah, the email was sent last minute. Nobody's here, so it was like five or six people to see the movie. And we just loved it because it was just this very quiet, very...
as a way to see the movie, yes.
It was just great. It was just great. And I was just... And the funny thing is that we had talked about how much we didn't like the trailer and, you know, everything else before the movie. So I first scene, like, I think it's like 15 minutes in, I was just like sobbing already. I was just like, oh my God, I can't believe this is amazing. And I didn't want to look at you because I was like, I don't want him to see that I'm crying already. Anyway, but it was just so beautiful.
She's so vulnerable in this part, yes. Renee. She really, it's just this broken bird quality that she gets across.
Her performance is absolutely amazing. Absolutely amazing.
The film itself is standard. I mean, I would not call this great filmmaking by any stretch of the imagination. It's workmanlike. It does the job. But I think director Rupert Gould understood that she's the draw. All Renee Zellweger. And the movie is all... There are people in this movie, Mike, like Michael Gambon, who's in the movie, very well-respected British actor, who's in the Harry Potter movies. I think he gets two lines. I mean, he's barely in it because everything is about Renee Zellweger. It's a total star turn. It's completely the return of a star to her finest. I like a lot of Renee Zellweger's work. I never liked Cold Mountain, the one that she won the Oscar for, but I loved Chicago, and I liked the Bridget Jones's movies, and I liked the Down with Love.
Oh my God, Down
is one of our favorite movies as a couple. We adore that
movie. Absolutely love that movie.
Yeah. But having seen all that, this is honestly, I think, her best work. Yes. It's intense as hell.
What I love about the movie is that it focuses on a very specific time in her life.
Yeah, 5 weeks. That's
yes,
it.
Yes, I'm not a fan of movies, especially about someone famous, that go from the beginning all the way to the end of their career. I just think it's too much to cover in general. So this was just a specific time. Loved it. Loved it. Her performance is absolutely fascinating.
I sat there. I only cried during two parts. I cried during the scene with the gay couple. Which I did not expect. That scene just really... Because actually, I was very skeptical of these characters. I was like, okay, I guess you have to introduce the fawning gay fans, and I guess you have to play it for slight comedy, which it was. And then this scene sneaks up on you, and it's...
Don't give anything away.
What?
Don't give anything away.
I'm not. The emotion comes through. And I would say that... I'm sorry, I should have looked up his name. The actor in that scene is the one who... I mean, Renee is great in it, but he's
phenomenal.
Brought me to tears.
Yeah.
It's just a snapshot into what gay life was like in a pre-Stonewall era, and it's rather delicately done and well done, and it really surprised me. So that scene made me cry. And again, not giving anything away, but I did sit through the second half of the movie going, okay, so how do you end this movie? How do you end this movie? Like, how do you do it in a way that is not... going to make the audience want to slit their wrists, or how are you going to do it in a way that pays tribute to the woman but doesn't make, you know what I mean? So I was sitting there wrestling with this. I'm like, I have a feeling this ending is going to be really awful. It was exquisite. It was exquisite. The last minute of that movie had me, I broke down. I said this to Lorenzo earlier this week. I was like, I don't think I've ever had the experience of crying in a scene in a theater and then crying again every time I thought of that scene a day or two later.
That's how powerful that is.
And it's a maudlin scene. I mean, if you're really cynical about it, you'd be like, oh my God, this is so melodramatic. But just beautifully, superbly acted. And I think the cut, the way it's edited and everything is just what a perfect way to end this movie.
I know. I can't believe I'm saying this, but she deserves an Oscar.
Absolutely. I'm not sure who else is going
to
be up.
I don't care. J-Lo
they talk about J-Lo, but she, if she is, it's a supporting part because she's part of a much larger ensemble.
Right. And I think that's what she's going to do so she wins.
That's yeah, I mean, she would be silly to go to after Best Actress, right, J-Lo. She'd have a much better shot in a Best Supporting. Anyway,
but
we'll see.
But it's in a phenomenal performance. She's absolutely perfect. Perfect in it. And it's just beautiful. The whole thing is beautiful. It was quite an experience. Sometimes you go to a movie theater to be entertained, and sometimes you go for a much more profound, I guess, deeper
this
experience.
This was just a purely emotional reaction,
yes.
Which is why I caution anyone. When you listen to our gushing, like, bear in mind, it's simply because Renee Zellweger was that good, and the story, and you can't not be emotional for this character. It's not the greatest film of the year.
I don't think
the film itself deserves any real consideration. Maybe the costume design, which is absolutely fantastic. But it's simply her. And, you know, remember, was it last year Glenn Close got nominated for that horrible movie? The Wife. The Wife? Is that what it was?
Yes. Yeah. Not a good movie at all.
Astonishing performance in, honestly, what was otherwise one of the worst movies of the year. And I think it's probably why she didn't win. So I don't know how people will feel about this, but Renee is definitely at the top of her game. And you should know, if you're a Judy purist, when she does sing, there were a couple times I'm like, ooh, girl, that is so nasally. And if there's one thing Judy Garland wasn't, it was nasal. And the other thing is, Renee Zellweger can sing, but it becomes really obvious in this film that she doesn't have much of a vibrato to her voice. Mm-hmm. And again, Judy Garland was all vibrato, like mm-hmm. a mountainside. Mm-hmm. That's not a criticism, because I think it means so much to see the actress actually sing the words, instead of mouthing to somebody else, Bohemian Rhapsody style. So it didn't matter that it didn't sound exact. It sounded too nasally, or there isn't any vibrato or whatever. That's just technical bullshitty stuff. She gets the emotion of Judy as a performer exactly right. The highs and lows of how Judy performed, the good and the bad parts of Judy's performing style. And we are at the last 6 months of her life, and the whole point of the story is that Judy doesn't have it anymore after, you mm-hmm. know, years of abuse. She, I looked up pictures of Judy in that year. Did you?
Mm-hmm.
Oh my God, she was ill.
Yeah.
She was really ill. Yeah. And she clearly had an eating disorder. She was starving herself to death. And Renee Zellweger makes a pretty good avatar for that kind of role, but she still looked way healthier than Judy ever could. But my point is, you weren't supposed to expect her to sound like Judy Garland, because Judy Garland didn't sound like Judy Garland at that point in her life. Anyway, can't recommend it enough if you're interested in a really good performance of a very difficult... We said this in the review. That cannot be an easy part to play. It's not like it's Marilyn Monroe or something, or even Betty Davis or something like mm-hmm. that. That woman was difficult and idiosyncratic. There was nobody that acted like her.
Right.
And she was sometimes really hard to watch or hard to take. And her whole affect and performing style is very much from another time. So quite a lot of barriers to overcome for an actress. And I think she just sailed over all of them.
It's great. All the performances are great.
Yeah, there's not a bad performance in the film.
Yeah, everyone is good. And
Jessie Buckley, who plays Rosalyn, the theater assistant that takes care of her.
She's really good.
She's really, really good. And if this was a better film, or if maybe Renee Zellweger wasn't sucking up all of the energy in the room, yeah. I would say that was actually a supporting actress worthy performance. She actually she stood out. Let me put it that way. The fact that you can hold your own against the force of nature that was Renee as Judy Garland, the fact that there are memorable moments in the film and moments of true where her compassion comes through that are very touching. And then there are moments where her complete frustration comes through mm-hmm. that are very believable. So
she was
shout
really
out
good.
To her. She is very good.
Very good. Yeah.
Okay. Let us take a short break and we'll be back to... I guess we're entering controversial waters. We're going to talk a little bit about Shane Gillis. We'll be right back.
Talking celebrities, pop culture, TV, and fashion. This is Tom and Lorenzo's Pop Style Opinion Fest.
We're back on the Opinion Fest, and we weren't even sure if we were going to talk about this, but I was like, well, you know, it happened. It was the big sort of entertainment story of the week, the big kerfuffle that, of course, like all entertainment stories.
Every week we have one.
Like all entertainment stories in 2019, they completely turned political within minutes, which was the hiring of Shane Gillis, the comedian for Saturday Night Live. And there were, you know, there were three hires announced, one of which was Bowen Yang, who is a queer Asian comedian, very talented and very funny. So this was a historic moment to have an Asian cast member. And he's not the first queer cast member, but to have a queer Asian cast member is a big deal. And I point this out because Shane Gillis is a stand-up comic who I don't think most of us had ever heard of before. He wasn't all that well-known. He was well-known in New York comedy club circles, apparently. But within hours of the announcement, a video of him recording his podcast with whoever the other dude was using anti-Asian slur, like the number one anti-Asian slur. Mm-hmm. It's specifically an anti-Chinese slur, but it's used against all Asian people.
And homophobic.
He slurs, used right? that, and then there was other stuff where he said faggot. There was other examples, but those were the two main examples that came out. And of course, this all blew up immediately, which, I mean, absolutely, backlash should have happened, and I fully supported the immediate call for his firing. It was sort of like the Roseanne situation with ABC, where it was like, okay, you think Sandra Oh's ever going to come back to your show to host with this guy on the cast? Like, that was my thought. Right. And are you ever going to get Awkwafina or Henry Golding or any other Asian artist to come on your show?
And when you just announced a new member, a new Asian member.
At the same time, you're asking Bowen Yang to stand on the stage next to this dude. But I have a feeling this is going to get super heated, and we have other, you know, I want to talk about certain other aspects of it. But before we do that, let's get totally frivolous and talk about jewelry. Because this portion of the podcast is being sponsored by Orate. That's A-U-R-A-T-E, Orate. Orate is fine jewelry made in New York City, founded by women for women. Pieces range from classic to statement to completely original. Orate makes the jewelry you've always wanted but could never find. Orate's gold feels substantial and the diamonds sparkle and shine. Because it's all real gold, you can wear it and never have to take it off. Shower, sport, sleep, cook, anything, it's jewelry for life. Because Orate sells direct to you without the middleman markup, they can offer the same quality as traditional Fifth Avenue brands at a fraction of the cost. Orate hacked the jewelry market, making real gold accessible. I know you selected some pieces recently for your mother, and she went bananas.
Oh my God, she loved them. I bought two pieces from the horoscope collection because my mom loves anything with her sign on it. So I bought a bracelet and a necklace, and she's absolutely loved them. Absolutely loved them. My mom loved jewelry, and she... I told her, and it's cute because I said, Mom, I'm buying you something. And she got all excited, and I kind of explained what it was, but I didn't really tell her. So she showed up and I to visit us, and I gave it to her. And she loved it. She said, I'm going to wear this all the time. She absolutely loved it.
We're always hearing from her about how much she loves it.
Yes, because it's very, first of all, it's the quality is just absolutely amazing. Great quality. The designs are different. I mean, the first thing she said, it was like, oh, it's very different, which is... You know, my mom language too. I absolutely love this. This is absolutely fabulous. So anyway, she loved it. Absolutely loved the pieces. Yes. I highly recommend them.
Yes. All right. It's ethically made in New York City, empowering women with the best jewelry options without sacrificing style. And for every piece sold, a child in need receives a book to further their education. All right. It was started by two friends during brunch when one got a green finger from an overpriced ring, sparking a conversation about how they were fed up with the traditional jewelry market. It was founded on the desire to shake up that jewelry market by offering modern women beautiful designs, amazing quality at affordable prices, and ethically sourced pieces that they can wear every day. So for 15% off your first Orate purchase, go to orateneworkcom. That's AurateNewYork.com/TLO. And use promo code TLO for 15% off your first Orate purchase. That's AurateNewYork.com/TLO. Thank you, Orate. back to controversy. Okay, so from where I'm sitting, there is no controversy when someone is using racial slurs and homophobic slurs in their comedy. I'm not saying that person needs to be run out of town on a rail or executed or sent to jail. I'm not even suggesting that person shouldn't be allowed to work anymore. I'm firmly stating that person should not be getting a job starring on a mainstream network television show if he wants to continue.
Not only that, the way he replied, the way he...
Well, that's the other thing.
First of all, they were trying to get an apology from me. That's what I read. That they were trying to get an apology from him, and he just gave this bullshit answer.
It was the worst non-apology. Yeah, it was so passive-aggressive, it wasn't right. even funny.
And then they asked him to do it again, you know, in a more polite way or whatever, sincere way, and he refused to do it.
Right.
And then after the whole thing, when he lost his job, the whole thing, then he made another statement, which was even worse. I mean, he really doesn't care. He thinks he's the victim here.
And he will play that card, and he will get a Netflix special where that'll probably be called Triggered or something, or Canceled or something you know, there's been, obviously, there's more and more rhetoric surrounding cancel culture, and we've actually done entire podcasts about it recently, and I think some people seem to think that we are anti-cancel culture, or that we're inflating it into some major threat to the culture. Look, Sean Spicer came out in that big, stupid, you know, ruffled lime green shirt for Dancing with the Stars this week. So obviously, cancel culture doesn't mean that people are out there seriously getting canceled. People can do almost anything in this culture anymore, and we will find a way to continue to support them. But I don't even think what happened here is cancel culture. It's calling it something. I'm just sitting here, again, as a certain, for someone of a certain age, I'm sitting here wondering, like, when did it become debatable whether someone on Saturday Night Live could use racial slurs? Because I don't remember any time in entertainment or in the history of Saturday Night Live where this was a thing, a discussion we were having. It was pretty much understood. You don't get to do shows like Saturday Night Live if you insist on using racial slurs in your comedy. So why are we having this conversation? Why are we acting like this poor guy, free speech, cancel culture, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, what the hell are we all talking about? That is not a word. I literally have never heard that word on television before.
Right.
Never.
And I think it's worse in this case because it's not like something you said in high school.
He said it last year. He said it last September.
Right. It was part of your act. It was part of your performance, part of your show. So it's a little different. Not that it's any better, but I'm saying it's a little different and, in my opinion, worse, actually.
No, this is not some instance of something that happened 10, 15 years ago. In passing, this was him on the job in public talking into a microphone just like I am right now and using that slur as casually and as offensively as possible. What I think is interesting, and I might get in trouble with my fellow liberals when I talk about this, but what I thought was interesting and kind of frustrating was it came out after they fired him, after Saturday Night Live fired him, that they didn't do any due diligence on this guy. They didn't look up much about him. Mm-hmm. They just wanted a conservative voice, a conservative comic voice on the show. And of course, there was a lot of outcry for this, against this. And personally, I am not offended or bothered by the idea of a show like Saturday Night Live looking for a conservative voice to add to their cast. I think there's room for all perspectives, and especially when you're talking network, not all perspectives, obviously, but I think there's room for broader perspectives. And I think you don't have to assume that a comedy show or a comic is automatically liberal. And hey, if you're funny and not super offensive and can stay away from things like racial slurs, let's hear what a conservative-tinged comic does. And I understand if people don't agree, if my fellow liberals don't agree with me on this. But my problem is with Saturday Night Live because I felt like, God, this is the worst sort of image of liberal thinking, which was, let's just throw any freaking conservative in there. It doesn't matter. That doesn't even, it's just a voice. It's just right, a right. conservative.
We need to have it because
and they did
criticized.
No vetting yeah. that they, I'm sure like Bowen Yang probably got vetted way more than Shane Gillis did because they cared about Bowen Yang and they treated the conservative hire like a token hire. And it, either do it or like as my grandmother used to say, shit or get off the pot. If you're going to do that, if you're going to make a commitment to be like, all right, we're going to diversify the cast with a conservative voice, then go look for a very talented conservative person who meets your standards instead of just slotting in the first angry white dude without doing any due diligence. It just smacked of not, it was, it smacked of tokenism, really. This weird sort of reverse tokenism of looking for a conservative and just throwing anybody in that slot. Sort of like when Sarah Palin was nominated for the vice presidency back when Hillary Clinton was running the first time, where it was like, well, we'll just throw any woman in there because clearly the public wants a woman. And then mm-hmm. she was, is, that was done by people who didn't understand feminism, let's say. I know that's kind of a weird counterintuitive take, but I really do feel like, well, this whole mess could have been avoided because now Shane Gillis is made for life. Like, forget it. He's got a whole career. He'll be the new Dennis Miller. He'll be appearing on Fox uh-huh. News. He'll get his conservative specials and he'll make a lot of money. Guarantee, which is why when people talk about the dangers of cancel culture, we're totally with them. We're totally with the people who shout that stuff down because there are downsides to cancel culture in the and but number one being that it's completely ineffective. But one of the with these criticisms that come out as if it's this out of control train are just, I do understand why people push against it because that's ridiculous. He will be fine. But if Saturday Night Live had treated this seriously or treated hiring a conservative as if it was a real, you know, creative and business decision and did the work, they could have avoided all this. They could have, you know what I mean? Like mm-hmm. they could have avoided this whole thing. Instead, we all got to watch that clip of him saying the C word again and again and again. And it just felt so ugly to me. And it immediately turned political because of course there were all these conservative people, you know, arguing for his rights. And I was like, what the hell happened that we're now arguing for the right to use racial slurs and then get a show on network television? Like, what? This just...
Right. No, I totally agree. Social media...
I am beside myself. I am nonplussed. Go ahead.
No, but it's true. And the thing is, in a way, you're just promoting him.
That's exactly what they did.
Sometimes you're just promoting. I remember the story with Khloe Kardashian when her husband had an affair with that woman. I can't remember her name anymore. I didn't know who she was. And all of a sudden, she's everywhere
on
the red carpet. She becomes famous. She has a show. You just give these people a platform when you go after them so much.
So congratulations to Shane Gillis. You're going to ride that to, I'm sure, tremendous, you know, Netflix special success. And Saturday Night Live, you really screwed this one up.
It's true story.
I don't know if I have anything more to say about that. The whole thing felt really kind of gross, and I felt so bad for Bowen Yang, really bad for him, just because I think everyone turned to him to see what he was going to say
about it.
And he really just was kind of
You can't even enjoy the fact that
you like, don't put anything on this guy. Let him enjoy his week.
Right, exactly.
But I don't know, is there anything else you want to add?
No, been busy watching
things.
Any TV
shows? I've been watching The Elite on Netflix.
I've been watching The Elite on Netflix, but it's an old show. I mean, I'm kind of late here.
Right.
They had season one and two. It's kind of like Riverdale, Gossip Girl kind of thing. If that's not your thing, don't even try it. But I just couldn't stop watching it. I was completely hooked. It's a fun show. If you like that type of Riverdale high school teenagers type of show, which is not my demographic, of course, but I still enjoyed it. Also, I highly recommend it. Drops today, I believe, there's a show on Netflix called Abstract, the Art of Design, and this is the second season. Season one, they actually had an episode on about Chanel. Remember that?
Yes.
About the couture show, the couture collection, and it was beautiful. It's a show about design and creative people and various feuds. It's not just fashion. I mean, of course, I focus on the fashion ones, but it's not just about fashion. It's about any type of design. And they're so beautifully produced. They're, of course, it's about design. So they're beautiful. So season two, dropping today, I believe, has an episode on Ruth E. Carter. And it's absolutely gorgeous.
Explain who Ruth E. Carter is.
She's a costume designer. She has designed many, many costumes for many, many great movies like Black Panther, like the Do the Right Thing. She has collaborated with Spike Lee a lot. And the episode is beautiful. I didn't know much about her. I knew about her designs, but I didn't know much about her. The episode focused on her career, her inspirations, growing up, and falling in love with costume design. It's a beautiful episode. I was so touched by it. So just an emotional episode about her and talking about how much she loves costume design. And then she goes on, of course, and talks about her work with Spike Lee and all the movies they did together. And then she talks about Black Panther and the inspiration for all those costumes. And it's beautiful. I'm just fascinated by costume designers in general. And I just love when they explain how and why they picked certain things to design their costumes. So she goes on and explain everything, why certain costumes in Black Panther were designed a certain way and how she managed to incorporate certain elements from every culture, from every part of Africa. It's just beautiful, beautiful, beautiful. And she's so brilliant, so intelligent, so eloquent. She's just this wonderful woman. I was in love with her.
The Art of Design on Netflix.
Yes, so go look for her episode. I think it drops today on Netflix.
The other short bit of news is that the first teaser trailer for The Crown Season 3 dropped this morning.
Yes, yes.
Now, everyone's going nuts because it's the first view everyone's having of Olivia Colman, hearing her in the role as Queen Elizabeth, but we've actually seen the entire season twice already, and I'll probably watch it three more times before it actually airs.
And we can't talk about
it. We cannot talk about it at all, but I do love...
We can talk about the trailer.
We can talk about the trailer.
Yeah.
I do love her immediately in this. It's actually the first scene of her first scene in season three, so that's what you're seeing with this trailer. And the one thing about the scene that I was like, I don't know if that's how you want to start off, is it immediately compares Olivia Colman's face to Claire Foy's face. I mean, Claire Foy's face is on screen,
right?
And the point is to show that the queen has aged and she's moving into a more settled middle age, which actually the entire season is about that in some ways. But
you can't talk about the season.
I know, but whatever. But I thought that was a really strange choice because I thought it was a strange choice because they don't look anything alike.
Right.
That's the thing. And it made the switch over to Olivia Colman, I think, a little more jarring than it needed to be. But it is a super charming scene, and I think it does set the theme.
Exciting.
It is very exciting. And just to hear the voice come out of her, right, she sounds just like Queen Elizabeth when
she
speaks.
She's such a great actress. I mean,
she's amazing.
She's really amazing. I'm so happy for her that she's getting all these amazing roles and recognition, and she's great. She's absolutely great.
So, all right, kittens, that is us for another week of opinions. Thank you for sitting in with us. We hope we were slightly entertaining, possibly illuminating, or maybe we challenged you in some way. Or maybe none of that, and we were just very comforting. Whatever it was, we'll take it. We were happy to be there, honored to be in your ear. So thank you for listening once
again.
And we'll be back next week. Bye-bye.
Bye.